I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, however you identify, welcome to another edition, a little bit later in the week edition due to some scheduling stuff, partly because of me. It is Biscuits Colon, a hockey podcast, and I am Dave Lozo of, I guess not Vice Sports exclusively, but mostly. I feel like that's the place you mostly know me from, and I'm in Brooklyn, New York, sitting in a studio, and you know who else is here. Say hello to...
Hey guys, it's Sean McIndoe. I'm up here in Ottawa, the former home of Dion Phaneuf.
Yeah, it's tough.
And that was the, I think that was the main scheduling issue this week. We basically went to the Vice people and we said, we are not recording until we have some Senators news to talk about.
Yeah,
because it's been a while. This is a Senators podcast and the people demand Senators content. And so they were we refused to record, and then they made a few phone calls to Pierre Dorion, and he sprung into action because he's a big listener. He's a fan.
You know what's funny is for the Biscuits Twitter account, I just decided when we set it up to just follow Eugene Melnick and Eric Carlson, and that's it. Those are the two people the Biscuits account follows. And so this morning, I go over to the Biscuits account to just be like, hey, if you guys have questions, you know, send them in or whatever. And because like all you see now are our tweets, Eugene Melnick tweets, and Eric Carlson tweets, but you never see Eric Carlson. Usually it's like Eugene Melnick. He's got like some charity dinner he went to, and people reply to him like, you know, whatever that hashtag is, like fire Melnick or get out Melnick. And today it was Eric Carlson had one tweet where he was like, you know, best of luck to two great teammates, you know, who are no longer my teammates for now. And I hope these guys do really well. And then I guess like everybody replied and they were like, for now, what does that mean? Yep. For now? And then he was like, calm down. And this next tweet was something like, calm down, like relax. I just mean, and it's just great. I just love the fact that we can just see the best Senators news all the time on our timeline.
Yeah, it's that. And that was the thing. Like I said, that tweet was like, people really were like, yeah, wait, what is for now?
For now
mean, like, is he hinting that he's gonna like, he's gonna go to LA now and really, because I'm sure that wherever Nate Thompson is, that's where
you gotta go.
Eric Carlson's gotta go. So
by the way, that trade,
what did you think of the deal? Like
it reminded me of the Seinfeld episode where Putty is doing Jerry's move on Elaine, and then Jerry complains, and then Putty comes up with a new move. And Elaine's just like sitting there in bed and she's completely unsatisfied. And she's just like, it was like a big budget movie with no story that goes, or a story that goes nowhere. Like that's all this trade was. It was like, ooh, Gaborik, that's a name. Phaneuf, that's a name. And then you kind of look and it's like, I mean, you get it. The Senators are just dumping money and the Kings are just rearranging chairs on the Titanic before it goes down. And they're just like, Phaneuf's better than Gaborik. You'd rather have him for sure. But, you know.
Well, I feel like from a Kings perspective, like this was kind of a real hockey trade, right? Because I mean, they like the deal went down as they were getting just completely shelled by Carolina.
Yeah,
so, you know, so they need a defenseman, and you know, like Dion Phaneuf. The problem is with Dion Phaneuf for years has been like he's not a $7 million guy. $7 million—that's top pairing money, and he's not that. He wasn't that in Toronto. He wasn't that in Ottawa, and he won't be that in LA. They're getting him for five and change, which is like expensive second pair.
Yeah,
which is still too much, but it's now it's kind of like in range of maybe where.
But it runs for so long. It runs till what, 2021 or
22? It runs as long as Gabrick's deal, and Gabrick is basically all but done, right? I mean, I don't know that he's going to be.
That's a problem with trades. Like, so many trades in this league are just based on who has bad contracts. Like David Clarkson, Nathan Horton, like all these deals where like either a guy gets hurt or a guy has a super terrible contract and then somebody will take this super terrible contract. Like very rare, like trades are so very rarely just here's a guy that we like Sami Vatanen for Adam Henrique is like a super rare trade where it's like, we got an extra D-man, we got an extra center. They're both pretty decent. Want to trade them?
A hockey sure. trade. That's how it used to work.
Yeah. But
yeah, so I don't know, like from a Senator's perspective, the trade makes them worse.
Oh yeah.
But that's not really a problem because
right.
they're already bad.
Worse
Their seasons
cheaper.
Are right off. So it doesn't matter if they get worse. It makes them cheaper, which is obviously
the ultimate
always
goal.
A priority.
Yeah, the ultimate
yeah.
goal.
And yeah. it makes them, like when I say it makes them cheaper, they save a little bit in terms of the salary cap, but they save a lot in terms of the real dollars. Like mm-hmm. the way the salaries work out between Gabrick and Phaneuf, like they save. I know like people look at it initially and they're like, oh, it's not, they didn't actually save all that much, but it's a pretty decent chunk. Like it's in the millions of dollars over the next few years. So the question is, what happens to that money? And that's why you can't really, you can't evaluate the trade from Ottawa's perspective right now, because we don't know what they're going to do with the money they freed up. If that money goes to Erik Karlsson, and that's the difference between them being able to make him a competitive offer and keep him or not being able to, then that's going to be viewed as a win. If it goes to other spots in the roster to fill some of the holes, then maybe that's a win.
Got
to
re-sign Alex Burrows.
Oh, no, he's got another year after this year, so they don't have to worry about that.
Oh, they extended him when they traded for him. That's right.
They did. They gave him two extra years.
Yeah, people make fun of me.
The other thing with Ottawa is, does that money maybe not go into the roster at all? Does it go into the front office and some scouts and, you know, some people to help?
Oh, like they hire some employees to do the scouting
yeah.
and the managing. Wow, that's a bold idea.
You know, to act, because they've got one of the thinnest groups in the league, and it's a situation right now where there's, let's just say there's some turnover, and it's, you know, not necessarily a great place to be right now with the way things are going. If they, you know, if that money goes into there, I think a lot of Sens fans would say, great, I'd rather have, you know, beef up the scouting staff to at least minimal NHL levels. I'll take that over, you know, Dion Phaneuf on the second pair.
You know where it's going?
Now.
You know where it's going?
I have a feeling I might know where it's going.
Eugene Melnyk is going to use, what is it? It's like $4 million a year. Is that what the number? Or maybe it's a little less than that.
I think it was less than that, but it was, yeah.
They're going to, I believe that whatever it is, he could probably hire like 6 organ surrogates to just be there on call for whenever he needs a new organ, because that's how he sees Senators fans. It's just, it's like the Matrix where he's like the machines, and then like Senators fans are the people living in pods. And then he's just like, man, I could sure use a new lung. Hey, what's going on there? Season ticket
you
holder.
Harvest partner. One organ one time.
That's one too
and
many.
Cynical hockey fans will never let you forget.
I don't mind that he harvested the organ. I mind that he's just so ungrateful for it. Like if someone gave me an organ, like it's like again, I'm gonna go back to Seinfeld where Kramer gives Jerry some blood and then like Jerry owes Kramer a bunch of favors. Only it's an organ. You have to the grace period for an organ has to be more than 2 years. Is all I'm saying. But like, let's say you're Erik Karlsson. Right? Does let's say this money all goes to him. Does that really make him want to stay? Like, I mean,
that's
really
the question, right? Like, we don't know what's in his mind. Because on the one hand, yeah, maybe. I mean, he's been pretty clear that he expects to get market value. You know, the dollar total is going to be important to him, and as well it should be. That's his right. So yeah, it probably does. If they've got more money to spend, if they've got money to spend on him or the team, and it's not just going to go into Eugene Melnyk's pocket, which is where I think a lot of Senator fans suspect it's going to wind up, that probably does make it more likely. The flip side is, okay, he just saw the team trade one of its, you know, I wouldn't say one of its better players, but, you know, a guy who was you know, a useful part of the roster. Apparently, according to his tweets, was one of his best friends in the world somehow. You know, it's, at this point, it's kind of like, you
what
know,
do you mean? Diafanov's a nice guy.
It's I'm sure he's very nice. But like
somehow,
you know, yeah, they've known each other for 2 years, but okay. I mean, that's good. So yeah, I don't know. Like what's going through his end. And if you're the Senators, if you're Pierre Dorion, like how plugged in are you to how this stuff is playing with Erik Karlsson and his camp? Like, and do you want to be plugged in? Do you want to know before you trade Dion Phaneuf whether that's going to be something that Erik Karlsson doesn't appreciate? Or do you just say, you know what, we got to manage this team, and it's, you know, I'm the GM and you're the player, and I got to make the best calls that I can and not worry too much about whether my star player is, you know, whatever moves the needle one way or another on him staying. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's there's a lot of moving pieces. I'm glad Pierre Dorion has his new extension.
Let's say Erik Karlsson gets offered 8 and 80, and then some other team is like, we'll give you 7 and 70. Like, is that extra 10, that extra year and 10? Like, any other team, would you, like, you at this point, you'd probably rather be on any other team but the Ottawa Senators. So, like, yeah, I mean, what does that money really do for you if you're Erik Karlsson?
What does it do? But at the same time, it's like, you know, he's going to be, whatever, 35, 36 that last year of the deal. I mean, an extra $10 million is not nothing.
Yeah,
I mean, if anything, I think I'm more, if I'm Erik Karlsson, I'm sitting there, if I've got an offer that's 8 and 80, I'm sitting there thinking, if I get to free agency, I can probably get 7 and 80 somewhere.
Mm.
Or 7 and 85 or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, maybe I'm willing to take that chance to get there and sort of see what the market looks like. But it is a chance, because you don't, you know, like he I'm sure already has a good sense of what the Senators will offer. And the Senators have, you know, that this they can talk to him now. They can sign him on July 1. They've got the entire year to keep talking and exchanging numbers, whereas if he gets to free agency, you know, in theory at least, he'll be going in blind. Now, you know, we know that there are ways that numbers can kind of get put out there, and teams can put out feelers and send coded messages and that kind of thing. But I don't think it's, you know, it's still, you know, that's part of it. How much risk are you willing to accept? And a lot of NHL players are not very willing to accept a lot of risk off the ice. At least they like the security. Give me the sure thing right now. That's why we see so many guys get signed to extensions before they hit free agency. I'm not completely convinced Karlsson fits that mold. He might be one of the guys who says, screw it, let's go to the market and see what happens. And if that's the case, if you're the Senators, I don't know if you can afford to let that happen.
Hockey players on an episode of Let's Make a Deal be the most boring episode of all time. Be like, Erik, we have here $500. Do you want to go with this or what's in the $500? I want the $500. Yep. You don't want the box? Okay, congratulations. Next up, we have another hockey player we have for you. Do you want to keep the watches or do you want to go with what's in behind door number two? The watches. I got it. The watches are great. I'm just going to hold on to the
keep
watches.
I
don't want it. There could be a car
just
behind
an entire it. Audience, an entire Let's Make a Deal audience of hockey players dressed up as hockey players.
So what do you do? I'm a hockey player. Oh. Okay, that's interesting. And from the Kings' standpoint, I don't know how they continue to find ways to get slower. You know, like, I thought they were getting faster this year. And they're just like, hey, you know what we need is Dion Phaneuf plodding around back there on the second pair. That's what we need.
The key here, I think we would all agree, the key to this deal, it's not Erik Karlsson.
It's Nate Thompson.
It's not Gabrick. It's not even really Dion Phaneuf. It's Dion Phaneuf going to L.A., and sitting down in the locker room and being able to tell Drew Doughty what it's like in Toronto. I think that's the key. Is it going to be a positive? Is it, you know, Drew Doughty's going to be like, hey, Dion, welcome to the team. You know, have a seat. So, like, what's it like in Toronto? Like, good restaurants, good clubs, good vibe there? Like,
you just start shaking.
Yeah. maybe this is, yeah, we need to get him on an NDA or something before he gets to L.A., but...
Oh, man.
Oh, well.
you watch the game last night? You watch Canada cheat and beat the American
women? I watched Canada beat the you're talking about the Canadian women beating the American women in the Olympics. You're talking last night's. They all kind of bleed together.
Oh my God! Are you Giants Patriots? It's been
like
Super Bowl?
It's been like two decades of this now. So it's sort of I do get them confused.
They are.
Yeah,
they are the Patriots, because think about it. They barely win. They have to have empty net shots trickle off the post just to have a chance to stay alive to win. And then last night, let's go over all the cheating last night by the Canadian women. By the way. Crashing the crease with two people, goal gets waved off. Kicking a puck in the net, goal waved off. Diving, leading to a power play that leads to a goal. Possibly offside on the second goal, wasn't called back. All this, and you get outshot like 41-19, and you barely win 2-1 because apparently Hillary Knight can't put a puck into an empty net. Now, look, I'm not a women's hockey expert, but I'm fed up with Hillary Knight's play based on this one time that I really watched closely. Like, yeah. Amanda Kessel's fan. By the way, Kendall Coyne is like the fastest human alive. I had no idea who she was until last night, and
that was ridiculous.
Like she's insane. I want to see her in the fastest skater competition in the NHL. I want to see how close she would be to Connor McDavid because it's nuts how fast she is. But whatever, you guys cheated.
End of the day, we scored four goals. You guys only counted two of them. That's fine. It was still enough. And Gold congratulations on hitting us with your very, very best game and still losing. And we'll see you in the gold medal game. And by the way, this is my favorite rivalry in all of hockey right now. Like, the NHL is a league without rivalries anymore. We don't, like, internationally on the men's side, it's better. But this is the best rivalry because that game was like so intense and it didn't actually matter. I mean, that was basically a glorified exhibition game.
Right.
Because the two teams still, they're going to finish 1-2 in their group. They're both going to get a bye to the semifinals. They're both going to play a team that they should easily beat. And then they're going to play in the gold medal game. So, I mean, it was basically, you know, just an exhibition game. And yet it still, I mean, there was more intensity in that game than most of the NHL games we're seeing this month.
I don't get the no body checking rule. Like, is there just like a too big of a size discrepancy between like some teams that like you can't check at all? Like, that's a weird rule for like adult humans playing a contact sport that you can't check. And the one penalty too, like the Canadian is jumping on our defenseman's back and falling down, and that's a penalty. God, you cheaters, you absolute cheaters. we can't talk about the U.S. Slovenia game because that didn't happen. Who cares? I'm not into that. The U.S. women, it's the gold medal's ours. There's no way that you can take that punch for a second time in like three games and expect to survive. I'm sorry. It's gonna be like a 7-1 final. You heard it here
first. Dave Lozo is guaranteeing a win.
It was like watching. It was like watching like Canada to the U.S. and women's play like one of those like countries that aren't good at hockey, and it's just like a speed bagging, and like the other goalie just hangs in there for a long time, and then eventually like the US or Canada win. Only Canada was the team getting speed bagged.
Canada just can't, good old Canada, just hanging in there by the skin of their teeth for 20 consecutive years.
One of your goal scorers was a cop. I mean, come on, that's unfair. You're cheating and you have the police force on your side. Like, there's no, that's a tough road to climb. It's just, I don't know.
Better luck next time. have you been watching the men's at all? Like, how's it resonating with you?
I woke up this morning or yesterday morning and it was 2-0 and I went out my door and then I got to where I was going and then it was a 3-2 final in overtime, and like I didn't really care. I just thought it was funny that I think one of the turning points of the game was, I think it was 2-1 at the time, and Brian Gionta took a penalty. Brian Gionta, the guy who was totally going to get an NHL contract when this is over, according to everybody who's written about the Olympics. And that was a big reason why the U.S. lost. Notice I say the U.S. for the men and we for the women. I'm on that bandwagon. I don't know. Like, I didn't see the Canada game this morning against, who'd you guys blow out today?
Switzerland. They look good, actually. They looked, they won 5-1 and it's Switzerland. You should,
right,
of course, beat Switzerland when you're Canada. But like, Switzerland is one of those teams that they always give them a tough game. Like, they're that team where you're like, why are we only up 1-0 when we've had 50 shots through two periods? And that always seems to go that way. And they look pretty good. It's like weird. The men's tournament is weird because there's the round robin, but the round robin doesn't eliminate anybody.
Does it?
So I think everybody goes through the playoffs, and there's buys and there's seeding. So, you know, obviously you want to do well because you want to be playing a weaker team or get a bye instead of facing, you know, one of the tougher nations early on. But it's not like, you know, it's not like the U.S. lost Slovenia, like that's it. They're in danger of going out if they don't win the next game. Like there's,
I thought only like 6 of 8 teams moved on. Maybe that's the women's side. I thought I heard that yesterday. I also thought I heard, oh, by the way, I wrote a curling thing and people were like, this is great. And then like the next day, I could have sworn during the broadcast, the semifinal game, it was a mixed doubles. And I already forget their names, John Morris and Caitlin Laws, I believe is her name. I could have sworn they said during the broadcast they were going to be married in 2 months. So I watched that entire semifinal picturing them like, you know, they're preparing for a wedding and they're also screaming at each other about rocks the whole time. And then the next day someone's like, yeah, I don't think they're actually dating. So I don't know where I got that from, but my bad for spreading rumors on the internet. I didn't realize
dating. I'm loving mixed curling for two reasons. First of all, it joins figure skating, is giving us another sport where we can watch men and women compete together and try to figure out if they're dating each other. And
or are they siblings? They're either siblings or
siblings, right? Which is the other option. And it's so, but it's kind of ruined real curling for me because as a Canadian, I have to like curling, and so I do. But then mixed curling comes along, and it's like so much faster, and like then Canada wins the gold, and I was like, oh, this is great. And then I was watching like regular curling. And I was like, "Oh, come on!" Like,
what's the difference though? It's still the same order and everything.
No, it's faster. They have the funny thing with mixed curling. It took me a while to figure out. Like, my wife had to explain to me because they would go to commercial, and every time they came back from commercial, there were like 3 rocks already out there. Because I guess in mixed curling, they set 3 rocks out to start every end. But I just thought they were playing like during the commercial and like the game was just so fast. They were just like coming back from commercial and it didn't click in that the rocks were always in the exact same place.
I didn't pick up on that either. Right. They're like guards, right? Like that they were like,
yeah. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is great. Like they just, and my wife was like, no, like they set those. And I was like, oh, okay. And I think they have less time and there's only 2 of them, right? So they have to like sweep their own rocks and stuff like that. There's not a bunch of people standing around.
Yeah, so I can't figure out the order of how, because like sometimes like I was watching the Canadians against the Brits. I think it was just all men. And like sometimes like the bald Canadian guy was throwing twice in a row. Then other times he was down at the other end, like, you know, being like, hit the rock here. And then like some other guy with like frosted tips would shoot.
When
I didn't know what was going
regular
on.
Curling, it's there's 4 guys and they each, 4 guys or 4 girls, and they each shoot twice. And so, yeah, and then like there's like the leader who's the boss and like he tells him what to do, and then like he goes down at the end. He's like, "I'll do it myself," and then he he shoots. But
yeah, I like it. I want to get involved. I want to get another reason to move to Canada. Although there are curling clubs, I guess, in New Jersey, based on the responses I got. But you know, I want to go to the, I guess not the motherland of it, but like the sister land of it. I feel like it blows my mind that Scotland invented it and not Canada. That totally seems like a Canadian thing to invent. Like, well, we have ice. These are like big giant pucks. So let's just throw them down there and see what happens.
Like, it's Canadian bowling is what it is, really.
Yeah, it is more bowling than, I guess, than it's like bowling and darts and like beer pong, like all just kind of rolled into one. It's a good
fantastic
sport.
So anyways, you're listening to Biscuits, Colon, a Curling Podcast. We switched sports so subtly that we're hoping you didn't notice. This is what happens when the NHL doesn't go to the Olympics. Sorry, Gary Bettman.
I'm also convinced this Lamoureux person is a traitor, is a Canadian insider. Lamoureux sounds too French Canadian. I don't know what's going on there, but I'm gonna look into it.
No comment. That was a filthy move on the penalty shot, though.
Was it though? Because
it didn't work. But oh yeah,
but like
it
you
didn't
look,
work.
You look at the replay though, shows like she was never in position to shoot it on her forehand. Like the stick and the puck weren't far enough removed where she could have. Like there was no threat of it. Like she still got off a good shot, but
that's still like, I mean, the only thing sicker than going between the legs on a penalty shot is to fake between the legs and then go back around. So I don't know.
The cast never
style
bought
points.
It. Never bought.
Unfortunately,
it
happened in the only Olympic sport where you don't get style points.
Seriously, figure skating. I don't understand like how you, like who was the first person to be like, all right, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna go out on the ice and we're gonna dance and jump and spin and throw each other and it's gonna be an amazing display of athletic ability. And you're like, yes, let's do it. One thing though, what's that? You have to smile the whole time. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Why? I have to focus. Nope. You have to constantly smile like you're taking a graduation photo for 2.5 minutes. All right.
That's
weird.
Again, like my wife was telling me last night that like, I guess one of the things you get graded on figure skating is how you look as you're doing the move. And I'm like, if I can do the move, right, I should be able to look however I want.
Right. Seriously.
Like if I can spin around 4 times and land, I should be able to make whatever face I want. If I want to be screaming in terror the entire time, which I would be, I should get extra points for that.
You should do that. There should be like a version of figure skating, like screaming figure skating, where like you get thrown in the air and you're just, ah! Da-da-da-da-da-da.
First time figure skaters. You just throw them out there.
Oh, God.
Start spinning them.
What a good podcast this is. What other winter sports are you watching at the Olympics? Should we talk about snowboarding next?
Snow.
Yeah, we should probably take the break and do the thing where I say, we have a break coming up here, and we're going to take a quick break for a sponsor that's going to have an ad at this point, I think. I don't know. And then we're going to come back in 2 seconds and talk about hockey. We'll talk about Jim Benning getting that extension that he earned, I guess. I don't know. Stay tuned. We have more Biscuits Calling a Hockey podcast coming up right after this.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
And we're back. Thanks to our sponsor. That was definitely there as we took the break. So being a general manager seems like a really good deal. It seems really hard to get fired. It seems like there's always a way to explain why things are bad. And things are bad in Vancouver. And they were going to be bad because Mike Gillis kind of set things up for a long time with contracts. And, you know, they were going for it for a while. So, you know, there was going to be. But I still feel like, even in spite of that, Vancouver is still too bad at this point for you to look at your GM and go, we need more of this.
Yeah.
You know, like he's got good.
It's funny,
but
because whenever stuff like this happens, I love to go on like Twitter and see what the reaction in the fan base is. And because, you know, like Twitter, it's not everything. It's not real life, but it gives you usually a pretty good sense. And it felt like there are just like two camps of Canucks fans that don't know the other camp exists, because the reaction I was getting when Benning signed his extension, I saw a bunch of Canucks fans that were furious, like just really beside themselves that they were locked back into this guy. And then I also saw a bunch of Canucks fans that were like, yeah, like, why is this surprising? Of course he got an extension. Why wouldn't he? He's done a good job. And why is there even a debate over this? And they couldn't understand why anybody would even be confused. So I don't know. Like, I guess the way I see it is when it comes to Jim Benning, like his contract was up at the end of the year. So they needed to figure out what they were going to do. They needed to make a call. And I guess what it comes down to is when you're in that situation, there's really two ways you can look at it. The first way is you say, has this guy done anything? Has he screwed up to the point that he should be fired? And I think you look at Jim Benning's record, there isn't anything on there that really jumps out. Like, there's no PK Subban trade. There's no Taylor Hall trade where you look at that and you go, that right there is a firing offense. You're out.
Hurricane Branson?
I don't think so. I mean, that wasn't a good trade, but I don't think that one raises to the level where you're going to say, you know what, we can't keep this guy around. So, I mean, that's the argument in his favor, I guess, which is that he hasn't done anything, get fired, then you're going to keep him, which means he gets an extension. The flip side is the question of, is this guy the GM who's going to build us into a Stanley Cup winner? Which is that, like, that's the old Ken Dryden test. Like, even way back when he was running the Leafs and they were trying to get David Poile back in 97 or whenever it was after they fired Cliff Fletcher, that was his thing that he kept going on about, was I have to be able to picture this guy holding a Stanley Cup on the ice in Toronto because he's built us into a Stanley Cup winner. And by that measure, I mean, is Jim Benning giving off that kind of Stanley Cup winner vibe based on his work? And I mean, he's been there for 4 years now, so he pretty much owns what they are now, I would think.
Yeah, that's why this year you kind of wanted to see some sort of improvement, and Brock Besser's fantastic. I feel like if Brock Besser didn't exist, like if he was never born into the world, Jim Benning would not be receiving an extension. But I mean, like, going back to Gudbranson, like, yeah, the trade, but it's just that, like, he seems so excited about re-signing him. I remember the Derek Dorsett contract and the Lucas Spezza deal. Like, he's mm-hmm. done some stuff where you're just kind of like, I don't know if this guy gets hockey in 2018, you know?
There have definitely been some bad moves.
Subban's size, of course, but yeah, again, if you're a GM, it's just really hard. Like, think about it. Like, how is Mark Bergevin still making decisions in Montreal at this point? Like, he has run that thing into the ground so hard, and he's just sitting around going, like, yeah, we got to look at some deals at the trade deadline. Like, they're still letting him do stuff. Like, he's not, Jim Benning is not that level, but there has to be.
Well, that's the other weird thing is that they never seem to fire GMs midseason, which means you've got guys that are walking dead, but still get to do the trade deadline, which is a terrible situation if you're a fan, because that guy is not, you know, if you've got a guy who's doing a rebuild style trade deadline, he's not worried about 5 years from now. You know, he's not out there looking like what gives us the best chance to win the Stanley Cup in 2021. He's worried about, like, is there anything I can do right now that's going to save my job?
And apparently for Jim Benning, he doesn't have to do anything to save his job. He saved his job when he drafted Brock Besser in what, 2015, whenever it was, like, it seems like, I don't know, like, I always look at John Chayka and I wonder, like, what the plan is there besides, like, turn the smallest of profits possible and then go on to the next season. Because, like even right now, like, they traded for Anthony Duclair a couple of years ago in the Yandel deal, and then they were like, well, we can't re-sign him, he doesn't want to be here, and they trade him to the Blackhawks. Now Max Domi is kind of the same thing. Like, all these young forwards they had that were supposed to be part of the future are now suddenly on the way out. Vancouver, like, what would you say the plan is? Like, they've held on to the Sedins until they're almost completely useless at this point, where they're not getting as much ice time as maybe six other forwards on the team. Can't trade them. Like, what do you? I don't know. I feel like he doesn't really have a plan, and that's what I hate.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that frustrates the Canuck side, the side of the Canuck fan base that is unhappy with this news, is you go back over the years. He and the organization, so he and Trevor Linden have never, like, articulated, this is the plan, this is the timeline. Mm-hmm. Like, in 2014, when he was hired, there's quotes from him saying, like, this is a good team, we like the core, we can turn this around quickly. They made the playoffs that year, but they weren't a good playoff team, and they lost to Calgary, the Flames, who were also not a good playoff team. And, you know, it wasn't.
That was like a 15-16 matchup or something, right? In the stupid playoff format that we have. Yep. That was like, yeah. Yep. Like, it was a complete
fluke. So, and then even like 2 years ago, there was another quote that I saw where he was saying that, within 2 or 3 years, we think we can be back among the elite teams in the NHL. And that was 2016. And it's 2 years later, and they've been like 28th or 29th this is going to be the third straight year. So, you know, I think that today, like fans today, if you just stand up and go, look, we're doing the rebuild, it's going to be 3 years of pain, or whatever it is, you know, maybe you do it like the Leafs, where the Leafs would never give you a, they never said a time, they never said a date, but they, it was clear what they were doing. You understood what the process was. The Canucks, it's like, they can't seem to decide, like, are we rebuilding? Are we reloading? Are we already there? Is it time? You know, I mean, what if, you know, and then they're kind of in that world that the Oilers have been in for so long, where then you retrofit everything into, no, we've been rebuilding all along. This is part of course we're 29th. I mean, we're rebuilding. What did you expect? And it's like, well, you can't sign Louis Erickson to a $36 million deal. Exactly. And then say it's a youth-based rebuild all along. And, you know, the other piece of it is, you know, that I hear from Canuck fans on the other side of the coin is they go, well, you know, our prospect pipeline is pretty good. It's better than it's been in forever. And it's like, yeah, and it is. They've got, you know, it's they've got a decent, you know, a better than decent prospect pipeline in place. It's not an amazing one. It's not like, you know, what Toronto had a few years ago or some other teams have had, but it's, you know, it's good. It's one of the 10 best in the league, maybe even a little bit better than that. But like, you finished almost last for 3 years in a row. Like,
what
of course.
What else would it be? All right.
It's supposed to be. This is like, you know, as a Leaf fan, this, like, it brings me back to the Brian Burke years, because there was, like, I liked a lot of what Brian Burke did. I thought he was fantastic when it came to trades and you know, some of the other stuff. But 3 or 4 years into Brian Burke coming to Toronto, they're, like, they hadn't actually rebuilt. They didn't, the prospects weren't there. And people would always go, well, we got some prospects. You know, it's better than what it was when he got here. And it's like, well, yeah, they're last place every year. Of course it's going to be better. Like, your standard has to be higher than that. You can't sit there. I mean, Jim Benning replaced Mike Gillis, who took the Canucks to within a game of the Stanley Cup and, you know, had a team that was picking, you know, drafting 25th every year. Of course, your prospect pipeline is going to be better. It's like that is a default starting point. It's not something to necessarily, you know, you get excited if people are saying this is, the Canucks have the best pipeline in the entire league. They've got the best set of prospects in the entire league, but nobody's saying that. You know, people are like, yeah, it's good. It's in the top 10. I don't know. Is that enough?
No,
I guess.
I don't think so.
I guess it is.
Cause so the Brandon Sutter trade, was that him? That was him, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have Jake Virtanen, who's in terms of guys on the roster, he's got 7 goals and 14 points in 51 games. Sven Berchi's been fine. Bo Horvat was pre-Benning. People seem to be really going crazy about Thomas Vanek this year, and he's been good. He's been fine. But, I mean, like, that's as good as he's been. You're still 29th in the league. Like, you're not.
And you know what? He's been good. But when you get a guy like that, a veteran like that, you sign him to a one-year deal, and you're a team like the Canucks, You're getting him because, yeah, you want some production during the year, but you're getting him to be deadline bait. So we got to wait and see. You know, let's see what he does. If he can flip him and turn him into a first-round pick, then, hey, you know, A+. That was, you know, you nailed it. But if he doesn't, then I don't know. I feel like you can't give him any credit for that yet, because we haven't seen the most important part.
Marcus Granlund's not that good. I mean, I don't know. I just
like, you give him credit for Besser. I mean,
yeah,
that's
for sure. Absolutely.
That's fine. But
that's why he has the extension, for sure. Brock Besser is the 100% why he's going to be there for 3 more years. Now
Elias Pettersson, is who was their first round pick last year, looks fantastic in Sweden. He looks like a legitimate, you know, A+ blue chip prospect. Olli Juolevi is already sort of, I think, dropped down a lot of the rankings. That was a top 5 pick. You know, Virtanen's in the NHL, but, you know, he hasn't really lived up to being a 6th overall. So, you know, even the draft record isn't, right. which was kind of supposed to be Benning's thing, I think, when he came over from Boston. It was like, this is the guy, this is the scout, this is the guy with the who ran their draft table. And it's been mixed. And you know what? 90% of the GMs in the league have a mixed record.
Totally. This is when it comes totally to this enough stuff. To but stick around for another 3 years.
It just, you know, I guess the bottom line on this is, just feels to me like Jim Benning has settled in as a decent GM with a kind of up and down mixed track record in most of the areas that a GM's responsible for. And, you know, did he deserve to be fired? Not necessarily. Is he a guy that gives you any confidence he's going to build a Stanley Cup winner? I don't think he is. So it feels like the Canucks were put in a position where they had to either settle for good enough or make a tough decision and aim for something higher than that, knowing that there was no guarantee that they'd necessarily get it. And they decided to settle in.
It's always good to settle. Settling is how you win championships.
Nothing wrong with settling.
We got some time left. It's kind of dealer's choice. What do you feel like closing with before we get to the mailbag? What's your next most?
Let's talk about this only because I feel like this might get you fired up a little bit.
Let's do it.
The Islanders fans.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
There's Islanders fans in general seem pretty frustrated and want to see people fired. They want to see either Gar Snow, even some Doug Waite, which I'm surprised because, I mean, he's only really had a year. But
yeah, he seems clueless, though. I get that from a certain standpoint. Like, he just seems like a kind of guy who's like, we need more grit, we need more guys. Like,
when he set Matthew Barzal for the last minute of it.
Yeah, that's such a, again, we talk about this all the time. Like, my way of identifying a bad coach is when things are going bad, you always bench the good young guy, like Costas Bear in Philly and guys like that. Like, there was one point in the season where they had lost like four in a row or something, and like Doug Waite's response to like, what do you got to do more? And he's like, we need more scrums in front of the net after a whistle. Like, really? That's your tactic? Yeah, get the boys fired up. Like, all right. Yeah. So you're more GM than coach, I guess.
And it shows you how ingrained that is in hockey, because Doug Waite, when he played, was like a skilled guy. He wasn't like a, you know, I understand it when the guys who are third liners think everyone should be a third liner. But, you know, like you think like the Doug Waits of the world would be like, no, let's get some skill. Let's get some of this. But no, it's, yeah. So Islander fans in general want changes, but a group of Islander fans in specific is taking it to the next level, I guess.
Yes.
And they're trying to raise money to get a billboard, I think, near the arena.
Right.
Saying, fire Garth Snow.
Yeah, I don't think they've settled on what the billboard's going to say, but that's the sentiment. And I checked this yesterday, and the goal was like $27.50 or something, and they got there. But now they have raised $5,980 of a $5,450 goal, raised by 313 people in 18 hours. And it's just, look, there are certain signs that you can self-diagnose for that show you that maybe you care too much about sports. And I believe one of them is when you take out your credit card and go to a GoFundMe and then donate money so that someone can put up a billboard so that your favorite team's GM can be fired, maybe you care too much about sports.
You know what? I'm going to disagree with you here. I kind of like this. Not because they're going to get the guy fired. I mean, not because, you know, it's not like the owner is going to be driving on his way to the game, driving down like that residential street or whatever and be like, oh, what's this?
Right.
Oh, gosh, I hadn't thought of that. I think I will. But there is a part of me, and again, this is coming from my, you know, many years of being a Leafs fan, and almost all of which were miserable. Like, there is a part of me that's like, hey, let's all put 10 bucks together just so we can put like a big F you to the team in a public place. Like, I can kind of respect that. Like, we're not going to get the guy fired, but let's just embarrass somebody and make a few headlines and just remind the world that we're actually here and that we exist. And, you know, it's not going to do anything, but it might make them feel a little bit better.
Because all right, so they're at almost $6,000 by 300 people. So what is that? That's like $20 a guy, pretty much.
$20 each.
Here's what I will do for Islanders fans. For every Islander fan that gives me $20, I will stand outside the arena with a megaphone screaming that Gartzner should be fired. For every $20, I will scream it one time. And you can give the money to me because I like money. And if you're going to throw your money away on stuff, throw it away on me. Don't throw it away on a billboard. That's crazy. Giving it to me makes a lot more sense than, I mean, it's only 300 people too. It's not like there's,
we're going
to
set up that GoFundMe. Make Dave yell at Garth Snow. But see, the thing is,
I get it though, but it's just,
I mean, I get it too. And we've talked about the Garth Snow situation, but I mean, based on your top secret sources, this is all futile because he's still got how many years left?
Oh, God, I forget. It's probably like 6 or 7 at this point. But somebody made a good point, too, that like the owners are billionaires. So like say he has 7 years at $2 million per year left on that deal. Or say it's $3 million per year. Like $21 million should be nothing to those guys if they want to really get rid of him and do something else. Like that shouldn't be an issue. But
yeah, or promote him to team president. I mean, right?
Yeah.
That's the old.
Yeah.
Give him the old Paul Holmgren, you would think. But, I mean,
I don't know. The Islanders are bad. I don't think really at this point.
Maybe the Islanders were just holding off hoping that Jim Benning would become available. And he could have slid in there. I don't know. The one thing, you know, you talk about GMs, you know, the job security and everything. The one thing that will shake it up is this summer if Ken Holland actually leaves Detroit. Like, doesn't just get kicked upstairs or reassigned, but if he actually leaves and wants to go somewhere else, because that's the one thing that owners love is a guy who's been around forever and has all those Stanley Cup rings. Like that'll be a guy that some owner out there would be like, I'm gonna fire my GM and bring in this big name who's gonna inspire confidence in my fans for roughly 2 months before they realize that the Detroit Red Wings haven't been good in many years.
How about this? What's sillier? The Islander fan Snow Must Go billboard or the Edmonton Oilers 1984-85 fan voted best team ever banner?
Oh man. This is testing my I have long been a proponent that you can hang whatever banner you want. If the fans want the banner hung, go ahead. Like I defend when, you know, you'll see like a team retire somebody's number and someone will be like, well, that guy wasn't a Hall of Famer. Yeah, but he was popular. Mm-hmm. So let him have his. Like hang the banner. You know, when you see teams hanging like division champion banners and that, I think that's a different deal. But I've never met a fan who likes that. That's always something teams do. I've never met a fan who's like really proud of the regular season division title banners. So I mean, there is a limit. The Leafs hung a Bon Jovi banner in the arena. So I feel like
all arenas do that though. I saw people complaining about Garth Brooks. Like the Rangers, they have a Billy Joel one, they have a Fish one. Like arenas do that just to, I guess, cater to the bands. Like I don't mind that. Like I mind an 84-85 NHL.com fan voted banner. I mind that a lot because
Did they put it like up in a corner somewhere or is it like,
I don't know.
It's not hanging with the actual Stanley? Because that's the thing. Like you're the Oilers. You have real Stanley Cup banners. That's
you're not the Caps. You have real banners.
Yeah. I didn't want to single out who, but yeah, that was who I was talking about. Yeah. Like that's, yeah. I don't know. I just feel like, I mean, was there somebody in the Edmonton organization who felt like they weren't doing enough to remind people
of the '80s
teams?
Oh, God.
I feel like that could just, I don't know, maybe just not a banner. Maybe like a little display somewhere in the arena.
Yeah, like on the concourse or something, yeah.
Yeah, like next to the toilet sinks and everything. you could put something there.
toilet sinks.
But I did like that as part of this, they got like the members of the team together for a photo op and like, everybody on Twitter was just making like the same joke,
right?
That it was like, oh, it's the front office.
It's a company-wide email sent out.
Yeah.
Can you guys all meet downstairs in 10 minutes? Yeah, sure. No problem.
And, you know, it's the Oilers. So bring all your relatives because they get a job too.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Gretzky. Joseph Messier. I know those names. Those are awesome. Yeah. Bill Fuhrer. Yeah.
I know that name.
God.
That name makes me happy.
You want to do the mailbag? We got like about 10 minutes ish left. We can do some.
Oh, we got 10 minutes.
Yeah, we can do some extensive mailbagging this week as opposed to just one or two mailbags.
Sure.
All right, let's do this one because this was kind of like going to be a thing for us, but we have so much to say in so little time here because we're verbose. Grand Admiral John. I don't know if that's a Star Wars reference, but I'm pretty sure this guy isn't really a Grand Admiral. Why would the Flyers consider any of the win now trades being thrown around? So we were talking about this in terms of a goalie because they're down a goalie. They've got Michael Neuvirth and whatever AHL guy they called up. I've always liked Michael Neuvirth, so I don't mind riding him for the final 2 months of the season. I think he's perfectly capable of giving them above average goaltending for 2 months, but yeah, I don't know. Like they're like the Kings of the East where they're just kind of like at the point where they're just barely in the playoff mix. Like right now, I think they're third in the division, but I think the Devils might be ahead of them in points percentage and there's teams right behind them. So I don't know. I don't see a reason to go out and get a goalie.
Here's my thing. And you're, I mean, Neuvirth's okay. And he's been okay this year. So, I guess here's my thing. Like if you're an NHL GM, right? Like it's always the same message, right? To the players and to the coaches and everything. You know, it's, we don't quit. We play 60 minutes. We go whistle to whistle. We never give up. We stick with it and we just fight and claw. And, you know, all of these cliches that everybody in the hockey world loves so much. And you look at the Flyers, this team lost 10 games in a row. Everybody's waiting for them to fire their coach. They look like a disaster. And they did it. They fought and they clawed and they didn't quit. And they put one foot in front of the other and pulled themselves back into the race. And have now pulled themselves, you know, not only into a playoff spot, but like you say, into third spot. They're even, you know, have a little bit of a cushion. To me, at some point, you then turn to your GM and you're like, okay, we did our part. Now, where's your part? We just lost our starting goaltender for, you know, the next month and a half, maybe the rest of the season. We've got other areas that, you know, we could use help. Okay, now it's your turn to show that, you know, we don't give up and we fight, you know, all this stuff. Like, let's see you go out there and help us get across the finish line because we did our part to get back into a race that everybody had us counted out of. And like, yeah, you see so much of this in the trade deadline where everybody, anytime any team is mentioned as potentially being, you know, shopping for immediate help. And, you know, clearly you're the fight. You're not going to be trading your top prospects or your number one picks or anything. But, bring in some help now. And somebody's always like, oh, yeah, but they're not going to win the Stanley Cup. You know, what are their odds of winning the Stanley Cup? They're 3%. So you go from 3% to 5%. They're, you know, well, yeah, maybe. Maybe that's all you do. But, you know, what are we doing here? Are we trying to win or are we not? And at some point, yeah, I mean, clearly there's lots of deals that a team like the Flyers or a bunch of other teams could make that would be bad long-term deals. You know, I'm not saying you blow your brains out to get anything you can, but at some point, like, you know, is that fourth round pick you're going to keep in your pocket? Is that going to move your Stanley Cup odds all that much?
Mm-hmm.
5 years from now? Like,
yeah.
You know, let's, you know, it's like everybody, not everybody. There's just a certain segment of fans out there who bug me because it feels like they're waiting for some 85 Oilers team to come along that's already a 50% cup favorite that's going to go out and make some big move to become a 75%. Like, that's not the world we live in anymore. There's 16 teams going to make the playoffs. They're all going to have roughly the same chances of winning once they get there. Like, take your shot, man. Like, especially if you're going to be if you're going to expect your players and your coaches and everyone else to lay it all on the line and leave it all on the ice and all these other cliches, like, at some point, man, like, you're a GM, this is your time of the season to do that. So what do you have, or do you not have anything because it was all just a bunch of cliches and nobody really meant it? And if so, you know, you can kind of expect that message to land with some of the players in your room.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You're fired up. I didn't realize how fired up you were. You're more fired up about the Flyers thing than I am about the
I feel like we hadn't done like a good GMs don't make enough trades rant in a little while, so.
That'll be next week. Pre-trade that. That's the thing though, is like, what goalie are they going to get? Like, I was thinking about that. Like, most teams that are out of it don't have goalie.
You're not going to get a star goaltender, obviously. I mean, you're not going to bring in, but there's lots of goalies. There are lots of teams that would trade their backup goalie or have a guy that, you know, have a guy sitting in the minors who's got NHL experience, and it wouldn't, you know, I don't think those would cost a ton. There's going to be guys out there, and you know, you don't have that long to figure it out. I mean, you got 10 days or whatever, so you can probably get 3 or 4 looks at Michael Neuwirth and see if he makes you feel like he can ride him the rest of the way. But I all I'm saying is if I'm a Flyer fan or Flyer player or someone in that organization and I watch this team lose 10 in a row, keep fighting, claw their way back into the race, and I get to the end of the season and I've missed the playoffs by 1 point because my goalie got hurt and we didn't bring anyone in to help, I'm going to be pretty frustrated.
RL's biggest fan, I assume RL is Ricky Lake. Ricky Lake's biggest fan wants to know, which player would you like to see rescued from his current situation by being dealt to a contender at the trade deadline? I feel like for years it was always Jerome McGinley. Like, he was always, yes. and then finally he was like, I'm free. Where are you going to go? Colorado. No. What are you doing?
No, you did it wrong.
No, this isn't, yeah. Come back. So I don't know. This year there's so many guys, like John Tavares, for sure. Oh, it's the city.
There's a lot of guys, but the thing is, like, they all have no movement clauses.
Yeah, like Eric Carlson. So
Henrik Lundqvist is
right.
To me, he's like that guy that I would like to see moved and go chase Stanley Cup somewhere, but he apparently doesn't want to be moved, and that, you know, his opinion probably trumps mine a little bit in terms of importance. I mean, I mentioned this in my post on Sportsnet today. I'll throw it out there. You know, if Henrik Lundqvist does, you know, he doesn't want to go anywhere. He doesn't want, you know, he likes it in New York. You know, if there was another New York team that maybe was desperate to make the playoffs, maybe had new owners who wanted to make a good impression, maybe had a bunch of fans who were really angry at the GM and maybe needed a goaltender, maybe we could figure that out. No,
a Rangers Islanders trade is probably,
that's the problem, right?
Probably not.
That's yeah.
Devils could use a goalie too. They're throwing Eddie Lack out there every third game, for God's sakes. They're
another kind of New Yorkish team. Yeah.
They can see New York.
There's that. I mean, Henrik Zetterberg's another one where, like,
yeah,
you know, it seems like, especially since he's going to fake retire in another year. I don't know who else. There's always guys. And then the Sedins would be the obvious if there was a way to make that happen cap wise. But again, they don't want to go. So that's the end of it. But yeah, they're kind of like, they've sort of taken over the Jerome McGinley mantle of guys who deserve to get a shot at a cup and aren't going to get it with their current situation.
Let's do one or two more. A little late now. I don't know what that's about. It's probably a reference to like a thing in a game the other day. At the end of the year, the Bruins will play 19 games in 34 days. Is this excessive? And is it the most NHL thing ever to tire out teams just before the playoffs? First of all, I have a plan. You want to talk about what you're writing. I have solved the NHL postseason conundrum, and my situation, my format would save the Bruins. I don't want to spoil it, but it would be perfect for them. But the Bruins remind me a little bit of the Columbus Blue Jackets last year, only they're better than the Blue Jackets were last year, where the Blue Jackets won whatever it was, like 15, 16 games in a row. And then it was just kind of like, well, now they're just going to coast, and then they're going to be exhausted, and they're going to lose in the first round of the playoffs. The Bruins aren't set up to do the same thing, but they had like a point in whatever it was, like 22 of 23. And then they're going to play Toronto in the first round, which is stupid because Toronto is the third best team in the East. Like, if you're Boston, you should probably play like the Blue Jackets or somebody like that. I really do have a fear that the Bruins are going to go out in the first round, and seeing their schedule the rest of the way, it is dumb. There's too many games in too few days.
It is. It's packed, and it's tough schedule too. Like, that's the other piece of it is I take nothing away from like the crazy streak they've been on, but their schedule has been relatively weak, and it gets a lot tougher. I don't know. I mean, is it the most NHL thing ever? No, I can come up with probably 20 more NHL things, but it's one of those things. And I think at least one of those games is like a rescheduled blizzard, like snowstorm game. So, I mean, some of this is out of the league's control, but this is, you know, if you're a Bruins fan, like this is your penance for spending the entire season nagging everyone about games in hand. And every time somebody would, you know, talk about, well, the Lightning or this, or, you know, the Bruins, but they've got 9 games in hand because for some reason they apparently took the first month off and had to catch up. This is where the catching up comes in. It's going to be pretty brutal. And it'll be interesting to see if that has an impact going in the playoffs or the flip side. I mean, they're chasing the Lightning for first place. They have a chance to catch the Lightning.
They're ahead of them in points percentages.
Do you ride hard to try to get that? Or at some point, you know, if you're Bruce Cassidy, do you go, you know what, 19 games through, I'm going to rest some of these guys. I'm not going to use Patrice Bergeron in every one of those games. I'm certainly not going to use 40-year-old Zdeno Chara. Do I sit some of these guys and rest them or dial back ice time or whatever it is, even if that costs me the number one seed? Do I maybe try to ease it up a little bit so that we've still got some gas in the tank and get into the playoffs, which is something that almost never happens in the NHL. You see it in the NBA, but they don't do it in the NHL. But I don't know.
I don't know. I think you're right. But if you finish first in the Atlantic, you get the fifth best team in the Metro. If you finish second, you get the third best team in your division.
But that fifth best team in the Metro is the way that division's shaping up. That's going to be some team that had to get hot at the end. So they're going to be coming in. Like, it's not like you're going to get necessarily.
Would you rather play the Leafs or the Devils in the first round? I mean, come on. Yeah. That's a no-brainer. No. But the thing is like at some point, though, you're going to have to play, like, the Lightning, Leafs, and Bruins are all going to have to play. Like, they're going to, like, even if you avoid one of those two teams in the first round, you're going to have to play them in the second round anyways.
That's it, right? I mean, if you're trying to win the Stanley Cup, you got to go through these anyways. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting just because he's right. Like, it's such an extreme mix for them over the last month, basically. You know, they'll get a chunk of time off before the playoffs starts, but then, I don't know. It would take a lot of, put it this way, it would take a lot of guts to do it. But it would be something I'd have to at least consider. And certainly if the Lightning get hot and, you know, they move 5 points ahead and the Leafs are still 5 points back, then at some point I think, you got to really look at, just resting up some of these guys.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. It's been a wonderful hour. We've grown, we've learned, we've talked, we've laughed, we've cried. But we're gonna have to hold off until next week. Are we back on schedule next week? I know you had to reschedule. Is that next week or the week after?
No, that was the week after. So we should be back to Tuesday next week.
Yeah. No, but nothing scheduled and for me. So we should be.
That'll kind of be our, I guess, our trade deadline preview.
Yeah.
Speculation, whatever. Hopefully we'll have a few more deals to talk about by then, and if not, it'll just be me ranting about wimpy GMs for 50 straight minutes.
I hope between now and Tuesday, like, the Rangers are like, we're not going to trade McDonough and Zuccarello, and the Senators are like, we're not going to trade Carlson, all these guys are not going to get traded, and this way we can just be angry for an hour, and then the following week we can be angry for an hour again about how the biggest deal of the day was like Michael Grabner for a third. This sport.
It might be all curling talk next week. There's a chance.
All right. Well, I have nothing to pitch. You know the deal. iTunes, 5 hearts or 5 stars, whatever. Maybe they're hearts on your phone. I have no idea. Check out the Twitter account where we post all the stuff. And that's it for me.
Yeah, that's it. We're good. And hopefully, fingers crossed. Should be an interesting weekend, and we'll be back on Tuesday.
See you Tuesday, everybody. Bye-bye now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.